Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm wishing my life away here, ladies and gentlemen. Not really. I just, sometimes I can't tell time. It just happens that way. It's 12 after the hour. And I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate, the talk show host who can't tell time. If I didn't laugh at myself, ladies and gentlemen, I'd miss some of the best laughs of my life. I hope you'll take that as a clue for yourself. It's always what I've always said is that if you don't laugh at yourself, then you won't get to laugh with all the other people who are also probably laughing at you. Joan Pride knows a little bit about that because she laughs at me all the time. Joan is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors and our good friend. She's here right now. Hey, Joan, welcome back.
Hey there, Jim. Thanks a lot.
Am I right?
Oh, boy, are you ever.
Well, you know, you can either laugh at yourself or watch others laugh at you.
Right? Yes, you could join in the laughter or not.
You can laugh with them or watch them laugh at you.
Right,
and so
exactly.
I prefer to get the jump on them, see.
And you do a fine job.
I'm very quick to laugh at myself because I think I'm pretty funny, Joan.
Oh, I have no argument there.
I love me.
So do we all.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm so eminently lovable, Joan. One of the things that is becoming a little more lovable, Joan, is what you guys reported on. They don't call me the king of Segway for nothing. and that's oil prices, Joan.
Boy,
a barrel of oil.
Need a bright spot in this economy, and this is really the one bright spot.
Remember, didn't you and I both predict? I know I did. I'm sure I did. I'm almost positive that I did predict in the summer that the $147 a barrel oil would not last. But, you know, there were people who were saying $200, $300. I mean, I'd like to know where those people are right now.
Hiding under a rock?
Kiplinger didn't say that. I didn't say that. You didn't say that.
Well, we counseled calm while people were panicking and saying, I mean, I think I remember people talking about $400 oil.
Oh, yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
The reason I knew that wasn't going to work was because even the price that it was on a sustained basis was going to reorder the economy, which is actually what 147 did to some degree.
Right.
We had a combination of demand destruction and the jawboning of the government and then the actual lapsing of the offshore drilling bans. Mm-hmm. Those three things, demand destruction and those three things by the government, that's what's brought the oil prices down, in my opinion. What do you think?
Well, it's not something I've studied. I know there's been a sharp drop in demand, so I don't know.
Yeah, the demand destruction is certainly part of it. But no, but I tell you what, I do know that Kiplinger was saying in those days, when it was 147, you guys were reporting, hey guys, oil's going to be around $85 a barrel. You know, ultimately, it's not going to go up. It's going to come down.
Right. And we're kind of saying the same thing here, that it will keep coming down, but it will probably go up. Back up again to that $75-$80 mark,
but not the $140 or $150.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But you point out this week that the market, the oil market is going to be in the range that it's in now, in the 40s or so, for the next little while, and then maybe come down a little bit more than that.
Right.
But then ultimately, probably, you know, I would think probably if it goes up, Joan, you know, it'll go up with demand, don't you think? I mean, isn't that where we are now is based on a lot on what the people who buy oil think is going to happen from a demand and a production standpoint. The next thing that's going to drive, it seems to me, and I'm not an expert on this either, Joan, but it being an interested observer of these things, the next thing that's going to drive the price up is going to be the demand for it, which means if we have more demand for oil, Joan, that means that the global economy is improving.
Well, that's true, but I guess it's sort of a chicken and egg thing. I mean, what do you think about the possibility that demand won't rise as quickly as it would otherwise because of the economy. In other words, people see the prices coming down, but because of other things going on in their lives, maybe they lost their job or they can't afford to fix the car or some other situation, they don't increase their demand for gasoline, as you
well. I guess I'm thinking of commerce more than anything. I'm thinking that I agree with you. It's going to, but see, Joan, for that period of time that you're talking about, I think the prices are going to stay low as long as China still. I mean, China's talking about 6% growth this next year, not 9 or 10% growth.
Right.
That's almost a recession for them.
Yeah.
And so as long as we got that kind of global demand shrinkage, then I think the prices, because, you know, one thing we've seen lately, Joan, is OPEC can't control this now.
I think
OPEC doesn't like it at $40. I think they've admitted. I heard the Saudi minister, I read that he was basically saying that they don't want $150 oil either, but they don't want $40 oil. I think they like the $65 to $75 range.
Well, I think he was fibbing. I think they would love $150 oil if they could keep it.
Yeah,
and if it wouldn't dampen demand. You know, they get to a point where they get too greedy, and then it goes too high, and then, as you say, you have the demand destruction. So that's probably the only reason why they don't like the $150 oil, because they can't
keep it. We can always count on Joan to hold those diplomats to the feet to the fire. That's for sure. That's what I like about her, folks. But anyway, so the good news is we got $43 barrel oil, and Joan, I'll tell you, I mean, I don't even want to think about what would be going on in the global economy right now if we had oil anywhere above $140,
right.
$100 a
right.
barrel.
Right. Well, you know what, it would be the S word again, stagflation.
I filled up yesterday, and I put 87 octane in my vehicle, $1.67 a gallon. Now, and as I was filling it up, I remembered, you know, I probably had some receipts somewhere in my truck that where I paid $3.67 a gallon.
Yep.
$2 a gallon.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just ridiculous. And now the one thing that's going to happen, it's going to be interesting, Joan, is the environmentalists aren't happy about this because it's taking the pressure for alternative fuels off, isn't it?
Well, and you begin to wonder if people are going to start up their love affair again with big vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the automobile companies are going to take care of that little problem. I know the big three, if they hang around, they're going to have to change their tune a little bit, but anyway, it's 20 after the hour. We're going to be back with a lot more good stuff with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
I said, hey, now, what is this? Now, baby, maybe she's in need of a kiss.
Welcome back. A little Foreigner for you there. 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com, and that's the mothership. And then, of course, our knowledge base is askjim.biz, and our blog, my blog is jimsblog.biz, and you can hope you'll check that out too. By the way, I do something every day. I do anywhere from, unless I'm traveling, which is makes it harder. I do at least two and usually four blogs, so I hope you'll check those out and use them to your advantage. And by the way, if you just get yourself to the mothership, smallbusinessadvocate.com, or you could even type in jimblassingame.com, and either one of those will get you to the mothership, and you can find the blog there. You can also find our knowledge base there, so check those out, and don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. Joan Pride is our guest, and she's with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days. And Joan, you guys are predicting that year after next, 2010, that because oil consumption, as we were saying earlier, would be growing, that the supply and demand thing will go up to $100. Now, Joan, I don't have a problem with the supply and demand pushing oil prices up if that's what really needs to happen. What I don't like is when we artificially hold the supply down unnecessarily, like I feel like I feel that our government did over the last several years, actually 15 or maybe more years, with this ban on offshore drilling. And of course, as I've said many times before, and my audience knows, these are my thoughts. I would like to see us wean ourselves off of carbon fuel, but we've come a long way on it. We're not going to wean ourselves off in a half a dozen years. We've got too much infrastructure, too much technology devoted to it, too much of the planet's economy is devoted to it. This may be a multi-generational thing, Joan, to get ourselves off of carbon fuel. We've got to make a commitment to it, and we've got to plan it, and we've got to develop other technologies to take the place.
Well, and that's the key thing you just said, developing the other technologies. There's been some work in that area, but I would think we need a lot more if we want to really get off oil.
One of the things, in my opinion, the number one legacy that Barack Obama, if I were him, I would wake up every morning thinking, I'm going to make the United States the leader in alternative fuel technologies. I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm not going to kill the current economy. But in 8 years, I'm going to set this nation on a path toward energy self-sufficiency, but without killing the competitiveness that we have right now. Some kind of a balance. So that's no mean feat, Joan. But I, if I were him, that would be the legacy I would want to leave, to make the United States the leader in alternative fuels for this century.
And boy, wouldn't that be some legacy?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. It'd be history books would be written about that.
Right, right.
And I think that can be done. But now what he's going to have to do, though, Joan, he's going to have to straddle the desire of the economy for more growth and therefore the old ways of propelling things.
Right.
And he's going to have to be in the middle between that pressure and the enviro wackos, the people who are religious about the environment,
right?
And neither one of them are right. They're both wrong to some degree. But he's going to have to work out. I think Mr. Obama is going to get a lesson in pragmatism, over the next few years. Don't you?
Oh, I think he already is pretty pragmatic, but I think he will learn a lot.
I think his initial announcements for most of them have shown discretion and pragmatism, and I'm so far I'm kind of impressed.
Especially since the far left seems pretty upset.
You don't think that's what I meant, do you, Joan?
No, I think he must be doing something right if the extremists are upset.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Okay, Joan, Let's move over and talk about the economy. One of the things you guys talk about is consumer confidence right off the bat on the top of page two.
Right.
What are we going to do about that?
Well, it's not going to be easy. We're saying that the Fed is already doing what it can, and which is, you know, buying paper from Fannie and Freddie and trying to keep things stable. But it's going to take quite a while to get us to even begin to see signs of getting us out of this economic mess. It really
is. It's going to be a couple of more quarters, isn't it?
Yeah, and I don't mean a couple of quarters before we recover, a couple of quarters before
right.
we see the signs of
right.
recovery.
Right. The fog, we may be in this funky fog that we got right now where we can't see our way out.
Right.
Maybe until you guys are saying maybe it's second quarter sometime.
Right.
And I think that's right. One of the things the Treasury is trying to come up with a way to boost home purchases, and that's going to be tough, you guys say.
Well, it is, and we're also saying that it won't deliver much punch to the economy. I personally think that it's just anything they do is going to take quite a while to ripple through the economy. You know, we didn't get into this mess overnight. We're not going
right.
to get out of it overnight.
Right. Well, exactly. But here's the thing, Joan. The government encouraging people to buy houses is one of the reasons we got into this mess.
Right.
So are they just, you know, are we getting more of the same? Don't we have to be concerned about that? That's one thing I'd like to ask some folks. It's 29 after. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. A lot more good stuff to come with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Stay with us.
Thank you. Hi, Jim Blasingame here. I want to tell you about the best business planning software on the planet, Business Plan Pro by Palo Alto Software. One of the things that makes Business Plan Pro easy to use is the Plan Wizard. The Plan Wizard literally leads you through setting up your plan. If you can point and click, Business Plan Pro and the Plan Wizard will help you get your business plan on paper and working. Oh yeah, their after-the-sale support is the best in the business too.
He's the man Talkers Magazine says is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for being part of my day. And we're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we're talking about the economy and what the government is trying to do to help these folks out, to help out consumers and homeowners. And they're going to try to get people buying houses again. But you know, Joan, we had some really bad news on the unemployment last month. 533,000 people lost their job in the month of November. And Joan, I was in at a Small Business Leadership Summit in New York Monday. And Don Wilson, the president of the Small Business Development Centers, the Association of SBDCs, told me, and I'm not sure where he got this number, but I believe him because this is what he does, told me that 210,000 of that 533 were small business jobs.
Oh.
And so I was curious about that number. I was hoping that it wasn't going to be that much. But one thing about it, Joan, you know, that's 533 people who are 1,000 people who are not going to be buying houses.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it's going to take to get the economy going again. But I know one thing: the indicators that I'm getting from our the folks who are out there polling the marketplace. We just had an interview with Sam Norwood, and all his stuff is pointing to pretty much like yours, which is for another couple of quarters, it's going to. Where we may not, what they were saying, Joan, what the Tatum folks are saying is that it's the economy is going to keep going down, but not as fast a pace as it has gone down the last couple of months.
Yeah, but we still don't like the direction.
No, the trend. We don't like the direction or the trend.
No.
Well, maybe we like the trend because it's shallowing out a little bit.
Yeah.
But we sure don't like the direction, and there were no green arrows in his report this month.
Oh gosh.
So, Joan, let's move down and talk about this contribution to pension plans.
Yeah.
Tell us about this. There are companies facing the contributions to pension plans. Is there any relief for those guys?
Well, the problem here is a couple of years ago, Congress passed legislation to kind of put pensions feet to the fire, and if you were underfunded, you couldn't just sort of go along that way. You had to really make up the shortfall. Mm-hmm. The problem is, since then, the economy has gotten so bad that more pensions, just because the stock market has declined so much, either their underfunding has gotten worse or they've gone from a position of being overfunded to underfunded. So these new tighter rules are clamping down even harder than was ever intended.
Right.
So some of those rules will be eased. In fact, the House just last night passed legislation to ease the funding rules. Now, I'm not sure if the Senate's going to take it up right now or early next year, but that will get done sooner rather than later.
This is another example to me. This is not unlike what I consider, as you were saying all that, it made me think of the mark-to-market rule. You know, when the SEC imposed the mark-to-market, which is where folks... You have to every so often. You have to mark your assets to whatever you can't leave them on your balance sheet at what they were valued for previously.
Right.
You had to adjust that price on your balance sheet to what they're currently worth. But when they came up with mark to market, they didn't anticipate that the market would go to zero.
Right.
Or near zero. And that's what got a lot of these companies into trouble. I mean, as I've mentioned before, I mean, some of the top economists and business thinkers that in the world are members of my brain trust, and they have said that if we had adjusted mark to market a year ago, if we'd eliminated it for a couple of years or something like that, we wouldn't be in this situation right now.
Right.
Let the markets come back up. Let the hysteria settle and everything. And so this is kind of similar to me to this pension plan thing. Is maybe they've learned. And the reason I'm bringing it up, John, is maybe they've learned their lesson. And because I could see where having to fund a pension plan when you don't have the money could take a company down.
Well, sure.
And then, of course,
and it may not be because of bad management or whatever.
Right.
It may just be because the economy, the stock market collapsed so fast that it was impossible to rebalance the fund and save yourself from the losses.
The term you're lurching uncontrollably for, Joan, is collateral damage.
Yes, right.
And I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, as we move through this workout, as we move through the next really 12 to 18 months, I think. Not meaning we're going to be in recession for 18 more months, but the workout and the move towards some kind of recovery and expansion. There's going to be a lot of collateral damage out there, I'm afraid. And that brings me back to my small business attitude, ladies and gentlemen. Remember what it is. I'm going to win by surviving. 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
As I was walking down the street one day, a man came up to me.
Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And I encourage people to check out their website, kiplinger.com. It's a site that I use all the time. And of course, that's where you can find their publications, the Kiplinger Letter, the 85-year-old family-owned small business publication that's been around now all these years, still rocking and rolling every week, every Friday afternoon it comes out, and by electronics, and on Monday you can get it in the mail. I get it both ways. I can't get enough of it, and that's the weekly flagship. And then, of course, they've got their biweekly letters, the California Letter, the Tax Letter, the Agriculture Letter, and now the Biofuels Letter. Joan, you'll have to keep us posted on that one. If that's still going to be, I'd be curious to hear about the interest in that now that oil prices have come back down, huh?
Right, exactly.
That's going to be interesting. And then, of course, they got a magazine that's pretty outstanding that you can find on newsstands. Joan, tell us about that.
Right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. Used to be called Changing Times many years ago.
Nobody remembers that, Joan, but you and me.
No, really?
Nobody else is that old. We don't remember that.
Nobody.
And so, and all that's available at the website, but also a toll-free number, Joan, you can give them.
Right. Our number is 800-544-0155.
And don't forget to ask them for the Blassingame 30-day free trial.
Yep.
Hey, Joan, let's move over to page 3 and talk about immigration. Now, Joan, let me ask you a question. How long has it been since anybody has mentioned immigration? Can you believe that in the entire campaign you didn't hear the word immigration one time?
Which
from
is
like
kind,
from like
kind
from
of
like
amazing.
July till November?
Kind of amazing.
What do you think's going on?
Well, you got me. I have no idea. I thought it was a very hot issue. I think one of the problems is it's a very, very tough issue, and your lines of demarcation aren't just Democratic and Republican. There are people crossing the aisles on both sides of the issue.
Well, I think one of the reasons we didn't hear much about it is because I don't think there was that much difference between McCain and Obama.
Well, that's true, too.
It's another reason why cap and trade, the carbon program, cap and trade wasn't discussed in the election because those two guys were pretty much on the same sheet on that.
Yeah.
So, so what are we going to do? We got you guys reporting that we're going to have a comprehensive legislation anyway.
Well, as you point out, there is bipartisan support if you've got McCain and Obama on that same side. Unfortunately, there's also bipartisan opposition too. That's what makes it such a complex issue. But and if you remember, the president-elect met with Senator McCain recently, and he has pledged to help him get this bill through Congress.
And what else did the president-elect do along those lines? Who did he nominate for the Secretary of Homeland Security?
Well, the new Secretary of Homeland Security, at least the nominee, is the Governor of Arizona, Jeff Napolitano.
Yeah. Exactly. And by the way, Joan, I was a little troubled by that because I didn't know any of her background.
Uh-huh.
And it troubled me at first that he chose for Homeland Security. Joan, that's a huge job.
Yes, it is.
That is a monstrous job because of all the agencies that have been now rolled under Homeland Security.
That's right.
I mean, this is a killer job. It kills people almost.
Because, for example, INS is no longer INS. It's been folded into Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, if you see the current secretary, he always, to me, looks kind of like a ghost.
He
needs a good meal.
And a night's sleep.
Like Mr. Chertoff.
Exactly, and a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
But Joan, listen, my I won't call it an objection, but my concern about her was not that I just didn't know anything about her. I'd never heard anybody comment on her Homeland Security credentials or anything like that. And then, last week...
Well, you read it in Kiplinger and you find out, see?
Okay, well, so you got... But what are her, according to Kiplinger, what are her qualifications?
Well, she's the governor of a border state. She knows the issue well. She was the first... This is interesting. She was the first governor, we say, to ask Bush to send National Guards troops to keep illegal immigrants out. So she's not some kind of soft...
she's not a panty waist, is she?
Right. No, that's right.
She's not a milk toast.
But I think this is the part you'll like. We say for employers, she softened the blow of Arizona's tough sanctions against firms that knowingly hire illegals. So
exactly.
She understands the employer point of view on this issue.
What is that? What did we say, Joan? Pragmatist.
Yeah.
She's pragmatic. But here, I have more news, Joan.
Oh, do you?
Last week, I interviewed our good buddy, Governor Pete DuPont, and he knows Governor Napolitano.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is Republican DuPont, very high on Napolitano for this pick. He says, I have met her. I know her a little bit. He said she's extremely intelligent.
Ah.
So if Governor, that's all I need to hear, if Governor DuPont gives a passing grade to Governor Napolitano, then she's okay by me.
Well, it's one thing Mr. Obama seems to like is fellow wonks.
Well, and apparently the good news is he's bringing in really smart people, and so I thought that was interesting.
She's also a really smart person, not from an academic post. She's a really smart person on the front lines in a border state.
Right. Yeah, I think so too, and so it'll be interesting to see. I tell you what, though, we all need to say a prayer for her and her organization because they are the wall between us and the crazies out there, Joan.
That's right.
The people who come ashore in boats and blow up hotels,
that's
take
true.
People hostage and kill innocent people. That's where they are. We come back, folks. We're going to talk about small businesses thinking about selling their business. Is it a good time? And I've got a side report to give you on that one, along with what Kiplinger has to say. Joan Pride and I will be right back. It's 9 after. Here's John Mellencamp to take us out. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. My pleasure, as always. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. It's actually 7 until the hour, Joan. It's 53 after. What do you think? How did I do that time?
That's much better.
Well, you know, I never was all that good at the clock thing, Joan, for some reason. I got to get a Mickey Mouse thing in here. I'm better with the hands. You know, with the Mickey hands and things. So I need to, maybe that's what I need to do. Joan, move at the bottom of page 3. Something very important we got to talk about is the prospect of selling a small business right now. Joan, tell us what Kiplinger thinks about that.
Well, you may be at a point where you think it might be a good idea to sell, or you know, for personal reasons you want to get out, or it's tough to keep the business going and you want to get rid of it for that, or you know that the capital gains rate's going to go up at some point and you want to take advantage of the lower rates when you sell. We're saying it's better to hold on a while if you can, because If you figure, if you're selling in a bad economy, you're probably not going to get as much as you might otherwise would for your business. The value
you're not
of it,
going to. You're not.
Yeah, the
going
value
to.
Of it has gone down like everything else. And
well,
I think. Go
yeah.
ahead.
Well, no, go ahead. You're doing.
Well, my other point was that we think that the capital gains rate is only going to go up by 5 percentage points. Now that's significant, but you might be losing more by selling now than you would if you had to pay those 5 percentage points later on.
Joan, I will tell you one thing. At this moment, and probably for the next maybe a year, the last thing on a business seller's mind is going to be capital gains.
Right.
The thing that's going to be on their mind in the front of their mind is how do I, if I'm going to sell, if I'm actually going to sell it anytime in the next couple of years, how am I going to maximize the value in the face of all the negative economy we've got, number
right.
one. And number two, whoever's going to buy it, how are they going to get the credit that they're going to need, the funding that they're going to need to buy it, unless I finance it for them. And but then I become an underwriter of that business, meaning that I look at it from the standpoint of, is this a viable business? With the economy like it is, can I actually turn my business over to this person and expect them to pay me back the same thing that a bank or an investor would think about?
Well, so if you're able to hang on, is it better to do that?
Yeah, I'm not going to tell people not to try to sell their businesses, but I will tell them this: they've got to be realistic about their prospects.
Yeah,
I'll give you an example. I've got a friend who's in that's a business he's in, and he just told me he's got a deal on the table that's with a signed contract to buy that expires March 31st, but it is subject to getting financing, and the deal is floundering right now. Because he doesn't have he doesn't know if the purchaser is going to be able to come up with the money.
Oh no!
And so I mean, this is back to the credit thing, Joan. We've got going on right now. This is a real challenging time. And so if I were and this is what I would do. If I were trying to sell a business right now and I didn't have to, see, that's another thing, Joan. There are a lot of people who are going to need to sell their businesses not right now
right.
because of the economy, not because they wanted to, and they're going to have a hard time doing that. And so they might be some fire sales out there, folks. If you look around, this might not be the best time to sell your business. It might be the time to buy another business.
Yeah.
Try to put something together. So that when the economy recovers, then you've got more critical mass, and then you sell the thing
right.
on the hopes of the recovery, so to speak.
Yeah.
There is no bear market rally, Joan, when it comes to selling a small business.
That's right.
There is no dead cat bounce when you're trying to sell a small business in a bad economy.
Dead cat bounce? I'm not familiar with that.
You are really? Are you? You're not serious, are you?
Yeah. No, I am.
Oh, well, even a dead cat bounces, Joan.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I'll
even a dead cat will bounce. So,
I'll try it.
So sometimes when you see things are, when you think things are looking up, it might just be the dead cat that's bouncing, not a live cat. But anyway, you know, but the thing is you know, that's the way it is. And so I would just recommend that small business owners focus on their fundamentals, stick to their knitting, clean their business up, get it tighter than the bark on a tree. And get it and survive, and then look, if you got somebody's hot that wants your business, they got money to invest in it, rock and roll, let them go if that's what you want to do. But I wouldn't think this would be a good time to be looking for a buyer right now.
Right.
Maybe in 6 months, but not right now.
We'll
hey, Joan,
see.
Thanks for being here. Good job today, as always. Good stuff today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time.
Okay.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you that when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you had a bad day. Greet it with a smile.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.